Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, welcome to Teach Me to Talk with Laura and Kate. I'm Laura Mize, pediatric speech and language pathologist.
And I'm Kate Hensler, developmental interventionist with the First Steps program in Louisville, Kentucky. How are you, Laura?
I'm good. How are you?
Well, I'm not napping, so
Laura You're awake.
Laura had to call me and say, you didn't forget the podcast, did you? Good thing you called when you did.
I know. After you didn't respond to the text about an hour ago, I thought, oh, I better call her. But I thought I would be waking you up, not preventing you from going to sleep.
Well, Laura came home. My daughter came home this weekend. And she was loading up stuff. It looked like she hadn't moved down yet, but she had fall things in this load, so she was... We were scrambling to get her loaded up and on the road, but I'm ready now.
All right. Well, this is a new time for the show, Sundays at 4, and I hope we can stay here for a while. I hope. We'll see. We always seem to have a little conflict after we do it a few months, but maybe this will be good on Sunday so that we can get more calls, and that was your idea, Kate, to switch to Sunday,
right,
since that's less scheduled for both of us. So I hope this will be our permanent time for the time being, anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So Sundays at 4.
Our temporary
okay.
Permanent time.
Yeah. That's a good way to say it. Okay, let's get going with three great questions that I pulled off my website at teachmetotalk.com. They're all from moms with toddlers with various issues, but all with communication delay. So let's just start with the first one, and this mom's name is Jennifer. Hey, you know, before we do that, though, we should say that even though we have these questions planned, we would absolutely love to get a call from a real-life mom or a therapist excuse me, today who wanted to ask a question, and that call-in number is 1-718-766-4332, and we would absolutely love to hear from you if you have a question about your child. But until then, we're just going to blab on and on about these questions. So here we go.
Well, Laura, let me say that for those listening in, I guess, southern to central Indiana area or neighboring places, Laura's going to be having her conference on Thursday, and I'm going to be attending. This is her second one, and I said I wouldn't go to her first, but I'm going to her second. So, do you still have spots, Laura?
I do still have a few spots, so hurry and get that in. I've got some emails for people who are trying to work out, but we would make room. I think we'll be fine. So if anybody wants to come, hear me on Thursday, September 16th in Edinburgh, Columbus, and that's just south of Indianapolis. I'd love to have you. That'd be great. The next day I'm going to be up in Maryville, which is the northwestern corner of Indiana, almost by Kate's hometown.
I went to high school in Maryville, though, so for a couple
of years. Did you really?
Years.
I didn't even know that.
Yeah, Catholic high school, Andrean High School.
Well, how about that? Maybe I'll see some of your classmates.
Perhaps. You're in the field, but it wouldn't be too much of a stretch. Anyway, for anybody interested, they should look into that because they're great. And it's kind of what we talk about on the show and then a lot more. And
yeah,
it's just geared towards therapists, right, Laura?
Yeah, and I think sometimes parents, I have some parents register, I know, for one in Fort Wayne and one in Evansville. And those dates are coming up later this month. But really, it's geared toward therapists. We move pretty quickly, and it's a little bit more technical, but a whole lot of fun. So if anybody wants to check that out, you can get that registration information on my website at teachmetotalk.com. And then I'm going to be in Missouri the week of August 11th. October 11th. October 11th in Independence, Columbia, in Springfield, and then Ohio in at the end of October. I can't remember. There's so many dates and places. I'm feeling jet lagged already just thinking about it. But exciting days, and I hope that you'll join us if you're in that neck of the woods. All right, let's move back to our original agenda today and talk about this question from a mom named Jennifer. She says, hi, I have a 33-month-old son who was diagnosed with speech delay when he was 26 months old. He's been participating in speech therapy for the past 3 months. He also goes to preschool. From a 30-word vocabulary at 26 months, he's currently at 400 words. He counts 1 to 20, knows his alphabet and identifies letters, knows his shapes and colors. I have the following issues. Number one, his receptive language is still at the 28-month level. His expressive language is at the 32-month level, according to the late... Ooh, I'm sorry, I'm having allergy problems today. According to the latest evaluation by his speech therapist, and she says his initial evaluation showed both receptive and expressive skills to be at the 3 to 6 month level with scattered skills to the 12 to 15 month level. So he's made great progress in
3 months. Huge progress. Yeah.
Huge. Yeah, great progress. Her second issue is, she says, well, let's just talk about kind of one issue at a time. She says, first of all, his receptive language is still at 28 months. His expressive language is at 32 months. Any time that we see that gap where expressive skills or what a kid can say is at a higher level than what a child understands, it's a red flag. And lots of children who are on the autism spectrum have that particular profile where their expressive skills are greater than what they can understand. And it just really means that even though he can say lots of things, he doesn't necessarily understand it, even if he can say it. And that's always a little confusing to parents, because when they first see that, they automatically assume that anything he can say, he's processing automatically, since folks with typically developing language, that's what we do. If we say it, we understand it, but not necessarily for these kinds of children. So I'm glad that she knew that that was something to be concerned about. And my advice to her would be, we just have to work really hard on it, on receptive language and getting him to understand everything, and not take it as a given that if he can say it, that he automatically gets it. So hopefully her speech pathologist is really reiterating that to her and really stressing how important receptive language is. You know, the other thing, in her introductory paragraph, she talks about those things, Kate, that we just go off about every week, so I guess this will be our opportunity to talk about that. With, you know, not overly emphasizing those pre-academic skills, shapes, colors, counting, letters. This is a prime example of a kid who can say all that, but is struggling with real-life, everyday conversation. So if you are listening and your child is language-delayed, I beg of you, and especially if you're a therapist who's working with children this age, please, please, please focus on real-life, everyday words, not all that quote-unquote learning stuff with ABCs and numbers and shapes and colors, because it really doesn't matter if your kid can identify letters if he can't ask you for milk, or if he doesn't understand when you say to him, go get your backpack and meet me by the door. And so, again, I'm glad that he's gotten all those words, and that is great, but we've got to help him understand those and then be able to use those real-life words in everyday conversation.
And so often kids who have this kind of precocious interest and affinity for colors, letters, numbers, shapes, they love that, and so they really gravitate to that, and parents oftentimes think, oh, that's great, he knows his letters, you show him a letter and he knows it's a D. And it's hard. I mean, it's really hard because so many kids really do have, not so many kids, but and maybe not always is it necessarily that those kids are on the spectrum, but a lot of times the kids on the spectrum do have those kind of splinter skills when it relates to colors, numbers, letters, that sort of thing, shapes. And it can be hard to discourage a kid from that, but I think a lot of times parents are enthusiastic about that, and they encourage it even. And, you know, to me it's like, yeah, he knows a D is a D, but he doesn't know that that's a dog, you know.
Right,
so,
right. So, and that's the problem.
That's the problem. And,
right.
You know, I would say if parents are going to let that be some sort of focus that, you know, of what they do with their children, their therapy time or just their time during the day playing with their child, to always, always work in not just the letter, but somehow base it on receptive language skills, connect it to everyday words, connect it to everyday objects, you know, so because those kids, a lot of times, that's really what they know. The D is a D. They might even go, duh, D, you know, and it's like, great, now what's this? They don't know it's a dog. They don't know that they want a drink or, you know, so, yes, we always caution against don't let your kids get too hung up on that early on until they've really filled in all those gaps that typically lead up to that, and it can be hard. Even as a therapist, sometimes I find it difficult, and I talk to my parents a lot about trying to really discourage that, and at the very least to connect it to something that is more meaningful and more relevant to, you know, typically the kids we see who present like this are two, and so I want to know that they understand all those words that generally lead up to knowing an A isn't an A. So it can be hard to do, but it can be done, and parents need to believe us when we say that's not necessarily good, but if you're going to go, you know, if that is, I kind of feel like once kids have that real strong interest or almost obsession with those sorts of things, it's almost like you can't break it, but you can consciously target things that are really more meaningful to kids. And if they're going to do their letters, then connect it to something that's in their really everyday world that relates to something that two-year-olds typically know. And two-year-olds do not typically know their ABCs.
That's exactly right. And if your child really does, for better or for worse, obsess about those things and want to use it, and, you know, like this child probably, let's see, let's keep going with what his issues are. She could probably use those things that he really likes to tie into targeting some of those other things. Kate, you had a good idea about, you know, that's a D. Let's, you know, talk about things that start with D. There's dog, there's drink, we can draw. Do it that way. Or if your child isn't great at listening and following directions and he's got all his little flashcards lined up, you could say, go find mommy the D, the G, and the R. And so practice those auditory processing skills, because you're not really working on that letter identification. You're working on him listening to you and is able to follow a direction and carry that through. Or you could say something like, if he has all his blocks lined up and he's obsessed with telling you those colors, you could say, get the red block and go put it on the chair. Now get the blue block and give it to mommy. Now get the green block and put it in daddy's pocket. And then you're still using his little interest with those colors, but you're expanding it and working on a core skill that he needs, which would be auditory processing, receptive language, following directions. So you can use it, and especially, like you said, Kate, sometimes it is hard to
once they
know how
have
to channel it.
Gravitated that direction, it can be. I mean, usually I can do it, but I see that a lot of times parents have trouble, you know, discouraging it. The magnet letters are in the box or the, you know, and left to their own devices. That is 9 times out of 10 what those kids want to do. But just label the color, label the letter. You know, there's not much that goes beyond that in its natural state. So parents have to consciously think, what am I going to do with this natural interest to build on it, to expand on, you know, to build on his weaknesses or her weaknesses? Because it's kind of that's where it stops if parents don't consciously try and expand on it.
Exactly. I had a little boy a few weeks ago that I saw just one time right before he turned 3 as kind of a second opinion evaluation, and he likes to play with his magnadoodle that has various shapes. Have I given this example on the show before? Have you heard the story before?
I don't remember it, Laura.
Okay. I'll go ahead and do it then. And so I really talked to his mom about when he wanted to put 10 triangles in a row. You know what toy I'm talking about, don't you, Kate? The magnadoodle has little shapes that you know, press it down and you take the shape and then you put it on the magnadoodle surface and it makes a triangle. Mm-hmm. And so I was telling her, okay, when he's doing this and still wanting to stay with the triangles and not wanting to move on from that, you get really creative so that she's drawing sticks on the bottoms of the triangles and saying, look, we made trees. That looks just like outside. And the next time he does the triangles, for her to take the piece herself and say, look, let me make a pizza, you know, and so she's always taking his interest with that shape and expanding it to real life every day, something he can use and something they can talk about besides, it's a triangle, it's a triangle, there's a triangle, it's a triangle, look at the triangle, I made a triangle, you know, over and over and over, which is what this little guy had a tendency to want to do.
Triangle.
And he was
triangle.
Like, yeah.
Mm-hmm. It is.
Well, he had
the
carrier friends with it at the beginning. Yeah. And it sounded very robotic.
Uh-huh.
And the first time or two that you heard it, you might not think anything. But by the 26th time that he said it, you're thinking, oh, my gosh, we have got to move on from this.
Mm-hmm.
So you can still use their natural interest. This is what those autism experts mean by following his lead. You can still start with it's a triangle, but you're going to move it in different ways and teach him how to talk about it in a new way, how to use it in a different way, and again, kind of expand his play. So you start where he is and then move on. So you can do that with these little visual things or perks, whatever you want to call it, with kids like that, you know, but you have to take it and think and be creative with it. And that is hard for parents. It's hard for a lot of therapists, too, to really kind of sit there and think on the fly, well, how can I use this? What can I do? So you may have to spend some time kind of thinking about that ahead of time. Okay, he's got a triangle, he's got a square, and he has a circle, and he kind of obsesses about this. So how can I take those shapes, and what can we talk about that would, you know, be everyday life? So as a therapist, you do need to spend some time thinking about your kids like that and having a plan for that so that you're not sitting there reinforcing, it's a triangle, it's a triangle, it's a triangle 26 times, or trying to put it away. Because sometimes with those kids, like you said, Kate, they get so mad if you don't want to do what their little hot button is that it's hard to get them to move on. So sometimes if you can't move on, you do need to think of just a better way to incorporate that interest to make it more functional and more relevant to what you're doing. Okay. Do you want to say anything else about that before I move on to her point number two?
No, I think that's fair.
Okay, she says, he uses words but not consistently. He flaps his hands and cries when he's angry or upset. Okay, so she's already identified that he has this huge vocabulary. But again, he's not really using those words all the time. So he really, looking at that 400-word vocabulary, he might only use a core set of those every day. So what I would recommend that she do is really, again, work those words into play and get him to expand the number of words that he uses in real-life situations rather than just labeling. I think she does say down in her next point, he doesn't make conversations. He can make a 4- to 6-word sentence, but he will not follow through. He's good at labeling, but he has difficulty with sentence structure. He's become better at imitating, but he still has a long way to go. And didn't she say he's just been in therapy for 3 months?
Yeah.
Yeah, and so at this point for him, I wouldn't worry too much about those long sentences. I would really stick with those short phrases because he knows a lot of words, but I would still be concentrating on the 2- and 3-word phrases and not trying to get the 4- to 6-word sentences because with the receptive language gap that he has right now at a 28-month level, he's certainly probably not understanding those longer sentences yet either. So I would not focus on those. I would focus on those short little phrases that make sense to him and that he can understand and process. And I bet that's what she means with but he will not follow through. What do you think she means there? I'm not sure. Maybe she means that he can say it. Maybe it. I don't really know what she means.
Let's see. Doesn't make conversations. Can make 4- to 6-word sentence, but he will not follow through. I think maybe she means he doesn't respond.
Well, yeah, I think
you know,
that's what I think she means.
Talking about
too.
Conversations.
Right.
He'll say a 4- to 6-word sentence on his own, and I'm guessing it tends to be, I mean, this is a total guess, but I'm guessing it tends to be kind of a set, I want more cookies, you know what I mean?
Right.
So he's made, whatever, how many words that is,
4
sentence, but if she says, do you want more cookies or more potato chips, she gets us there.
Yeah, he's not processing it, which is why his receptive language is, he's scoring less than his expressive language, what he can say. So
I think
she
that's
does
what
need,
she means. He's not conversing. And
yeah.
By this age, how old is he?
He's
33 months.
3 months. Sorry about that.
How many turns should he be able to take in a conversation, Laura?
Oh, 4 to 9. So he should be going back and forth. in conversation, you know, she should be able to say something and then him say something back and then mom says something again and then he says something back, you know, that at least four times back and forth. And
which
she says,
is where a lot of these kids really do falter.
Struggle,
because,
yeah.
Because you see, because I think my theory is that their receptive language skills really, really aren't, you know, I would even venture to question the 28-month level. It could certainly be
right.
True, but I'd still say, you know, this is something that I see the school system routine here in Kentucky routinely kind of not really factor into an evaluation is how, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because we have a fair number of kids who may not qualify for speech through the school system, but this ability to converse. And, you know, in my mind, kids who are not nearly as verbal as this child can take turns in a conversation if they're really understanding. You know those kids, Laura,
yeah.
who really are very language-delayed expressively, but you can ask them questions and they respond even if it's by shaking their head or grabbing what they want you
or
to know.
Gesture.
Or
a gesture, yeah.
Yeah, they do go, and I always find those kids very interesting because I think, well, he's right with me, everything I'm saying. And you're able to keep a quote-unquote conversation going even if they have
words.
Very few words or no words, yeah. And this little guy, it sounds like, he's either pitching or it's not happening. You know,
right.
He can get his long phrase out sometimes, but when she talks to him, he doesn't seem to respond, doesn't really even, you know, in gesture. He just doesn't respond.
Right, he's not processing it. So what she needs to really focus on is the social connectedness and really getting him to stay with her and play with her and be with her and have that nice joint attention where they're both paying attention to the same thing and they're both looking at each other and looking at the toy and having all those wonderful interactions, even if it isn't without words. And did I say that right? Even if it is without words, that's what I meant to say. So that she's really focused on him understanding and participating, and again, that social connection, rather than spitting out a long sentence that probably doesn't mean very much to him anyway. And so she needs to take the focus off that sentence length. And it's always interesting to me, too, when a mom, we've talked about this before as well, has kind of a running list of every word he's ever said and knows that he has 400 words, but then can make the point, but he doesn't use those consistently. So, you know, if I were talking with this mom and working with this child, I would say, well, you know, he's said 400 words before, but he does not have a 400-word vocabulary. And so we would really talk about the difference of what that means and talk about the kind of core set of words that he does understand. And I would really want to try to get those in phrases and make sure that he's using those if we were looking at his expressive language, and then make sure we're filling in the gaps with the receptive language so that he is understanding very, very simple things. And my guess would be that because he knows all these things like shapes, colors, letters, numbers, that they've kind of glossed over some of those foundational receptive language skills. So if I were her, I would back up and take a look at that. If you need some help with that, Jennifer, I've got a great DVD series, Teach Me to Listen and Obey 1 and 2. I would probably just get Listen and Obey 2 because it talks about helping children exactly like this understand language and how you can do that through play. And it gives you some really specific things you can work on. So if I were her, that's what I would do. And I would also really incorporate lots of those little social games that we talk about all the time, because my guess is, since she says he doesn't make conversations, is that he doesn't stay with her. And he doesn't really want to or appear that he's understanding and really with her, even though they're right there talking. It's probably mom doing lots of the talking and him maybe even echoing or saying some things, but there's still that connectedness that's not present probably. And I'm just guessing because she didn't give us that information. But I would really focus on his receptive language and on his social skills so that he becomes an efficient communicator or a functional communicator, not just a kid who labels.
Right, which is what we see, or I see a lot, is that I'm able to get kids to the label it stage, and the next step where they're really responding appropriately or consistently, can be a big step up. I mean, that's...
Yeah, it really can be.
Yeah, it can be, you know, it requires lots of focus, and it's not as tangible because receptive language, you know, it's not how many words does he say, it's what does he respond to appropriately, what does he really understand.
Right.
Can be hard to target, but critically important to target. She closes
exactly.
Here, Laura, she says, I met up with a couple of friends who have kids similar to his age, and the difference is drastic. This has made me frustrated and really want to help my kid develop. Please provide some ideas. She doesn't exactly say how the difference was drastic, and see, that's what I was kind of going back to on that. His
right.
receptive language skills are at 28 months. I would say,
maybe not there.
Yeah. If they were really 28 months, I don't think the difference would be, I mean, the child's only 33 months.
Right.
And so, you know, on paper, however he looked when, you know, and sometimes, I always feel like when we come up with an age range on a child's skills, it's a guesstimate. It's a number, and it's somewhere in that ballpark. But I would say some of what he does, you know, looks like it could be close to that, but then in other areas probably not. And considering when they tested him, and he's only been in therapy 3 months, he was at the 3 to 6 month level.
Yeah.
With some skills, scattered skills to 12 to 15. So he was really quite delayed when he first started getting speech, and it sounds like he's made terrific progress, but I'm guessing he probably isn't quite at this 28 to 32 or 3, whatever she had, 31.
Probably so, and a lot of children like this really have such visual strengths that they test better than they really are in everyday life. So,
mm-hmm.
you know, pictures and doing it in a really controlled setting with a therapist that he probably has come to know and love over this 3 months, he could probably do things that he can't do in everyday life. And that happens all the time in therapy sessions. I'll think a kid's doing a lot better than mom tells me that he's doing because he knows my routines and I know him. And so I'm playing off that, and he knows what's expected and he knows what to do. And then, you know, when the door to my car closes, it gets a little harder because things aren't as predictable.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, they're not those routines that we've established. You know what? I just looked at the screen. We have a caller.
Oh, yay.
Hi, caller. Are you there?
Hi.
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 Yes, we're talking to you. Okay, go ahead.
My name is Patty, and I wrote in, I don't know if you'll remember because you get so many people writing in and calling, but I wrote in a few months ago about my son, Sean, the teacher, and I wasn't able to call in on that day. And now that you've moved it to Sunday, I can call.
Oh, yeah.
It was about, he was 20 months old, I think, at the time, and you answered lots of questions about pointing and different things for me.
Uh-huh.
So I'm back with some more questions. He just turned 2 yesterday, and
happy birthday.
Thank you. I've been feeling pretty good about his progress. He's made lots of progress, but he's still not where he should be.
Right.
And I recently uploaded some more of your podcasts, and I was listening to one the other day, and it talked about the number of words, and you had said, and I knew this, but I guess I didn't want to think about it, but the 50 for 2 years old, that's really on
the low
end. Right.
Yeah.
And then on that same podcast, you talked about making sure they're spontaneous words. So when I really thought about how many spontaneous words he had compared to how many words, if we asked him, if we pointed to something and asked him what it was,
right.
or if he repeated, and so it's less. I'd say about 25 only spontaneous that we hear on a pretty regular basis.
Uh-huh.
His receptive language, I think, is really good. I mean, he pretty much anything we ask him or tell him, he can do, or, you know, he follows well. You know, most of his colors, he can say some of them, but mainly it's if I ask him whatever it might be, M&M's, blocks, whatever. I ask him the color, he'll point to it. And he's starting to know, he knows about 20 of his alphabet letters just by, if I ask him, he can point to them. So cognitively, I think he's doing pretty well, but the speech is still an issue. He does have some low muscle tone. We've been told that he's on the low end of normal, although then somebody else said, or you could say he's on the high end of low. So, I mean, I guess it's basically the same thing. We're going to take him to see a pediatric rehabilitation doctor in October. But I just wondered how much the low muscle tone, if it could be part of the speech or if it's probably not related to that.
You know, if he were talking a lot and if you were just having trouble understanding him and
okay.
his words were really slurred or
okay.
his vowel sounded weird, then I would say, yes, the low muscle tone is definitely your main culprit. But because
okay.
it's kind of at the ideation phase of language, meaning that,
right.
you know, he's having to come up with the word and name the thing, I don't think that's why he has the language delay.
Okay.
And so low muscle tone, I mean, it sounds to me, and well, let me just say, kids with low muscle tone, we know that because of that, neurologically, there are just some differences. And so you'll frequently see that kids with lower muscle tone are later talkers. And to me, it doesn't mean that the low muscle tone necessarily caused them to learn words later. It's just they're wired differently. They
okay.
developmentally, they're struggling, and probably the same kinds of glitches, for lack of a better word, with that neurological development that caused the low muscle tone also has affected their ability to acquire language. But it's super that his receptive language is doing so well. And let me back up and say one more thing about that.
Okay.
With low muscle tone, everything that you do
uh-huh.
is harder. And so
okay.
talking is harder for him, but is it the reason that he's not using the number of words that he should? Yes and no. I mean, if it was just an intelligibility problem, you know, then we would say, okay, it's just because of that low tone, and he's just going to have to work a little harder and know that it's just going to be harder. But because he's had difficulty initiating talking, you know, building that vocabulary, I would say that it's not the only thing going on. But
okay.
the bright side of that, Betty, is you said he's made some progress. He's knows more words now. He's using more words. Even if it's just 25, don't get caught up in, oh, no, he should have 300 or whatever. You know, try to just look at his rate of progress and see that he keeps gaining and that he keeps, you know, learning to use more words, and it'll come. It's probably going to be slower than you would like, but just hang in there because you sound like you're on the right path with that.
Okay.
With the things that you're talking about.
The low muscle tone, if I just making sure that I understand correctly, the things like some of his words, like when he says orange, he says it. I don't even know if I can repeat it. Like on, kind of like slurs a little bit. And he one day said air conditioner on, because he wanted us to turn on the unit air conditioner, and it was
uh-huh.
like all slurred together, but I knew what he said. So,
right.
And he often drops the first letter of words. He says, he'll go and put his cup in the ink instead of the sink, and things like that. So maybe that part is low muscle tone, but the actual generating the spontaneous speech is probably part of
probably
the delay.
Probably not.
Okay.
Right. Right. That's what I think. But again, Betty, I haven't looked at little Sean, so I don't know.
Right.
We're just going, you know, by what you're saying here. And I'm glad you've got another appointment to follow up with that. Your speech pathologist, though, will probably help you understand more about his language development and, you know, what you can do to help him than the rehab doctor will. And I'm not slamming the rehab doctor people.
Right.
But you need to keep that appointment, and you need to go just look at him from a diagnostic perspective. And, you know, the doctor may be able to kind of share some things about him prognostically, you know, what he'll look like in the future. But your best bet is going to be to continue to work with your speech pathologist, and the things that you do every day at home matter more than what the doctor can tell you in one appointment.
Okay, because, you know, a couple things. One thing is we took him to a neurologist when we first, he goes to intervention, and we took him to speech and occupational therapy all summer long when he was out of intervention. But when we took him to the neurologist.
Now, when you say intervention, do you mean like play group kind of thing?
No, I mean school. Well, he goes to the early on program in our state, and he gets 1 hour of like a play group, and then the other hour was a half hour of occupational and a half hour of physical therapy. This year, starting this week, they're doing 1 hour of play group, one half hour of physical therapy and one half hour of speech. But we're going to still keep him in the private speech at the same time.
Okay.
But when we took him to the neurologist, he said no autism.
Oh,
sure. Sorry.
Hang on 1 second, Betty. Kate, I bet her state, does your state, is it based through your public school so they were out for the summer? Is that what
yes,
you meant?
Yes, that's
okay.
Right, yep. So
right.
We took him to, when he was off from that program for the summer, we took him to the hospital through their speech
right.
because it was
for outpatient
insurance. Right.
Okay. Yeah.
So when we took him to the neurologist, he said no autism, no cerebral palsy. He, like, said no, like, to everything and said, if his speech doesn't pick up by 2, you might want to have him see a speech therapist, but didn't recommend that we did it sooner, although we didn't listen to him and we did it anyway. He said,
good call,
if you are still worried about him in a year, come back. So we left that appointment thinking, I mean, we felt great, although
right.
I don't totally agree with him. So now we're going to this physical rehab doctor, and part of me thinks, like, I don't know if we should have an MRI, if we should see if there's some brain damage or if I just need to relax a little bit.
You know,
well,
let me tell
what?
You about that. But what if you get an MRI that says brain damage, what would that make you do that you wouldn't already do? I mean, this is what I talk to parents about all the time. You can go and you can have tons of diagnostic appointments, and you can get all this information, which is super, and I'm not faulting any parent who wants to do that.
Right.
But that doesn't matter as much as what you guys do with him every day at home to help him learn to use words and communicate. And so you can get, I mean, he's not going to have a surgery that would fix it, probably, you know.
I think it would just help me for me to understand better, like, what is,
right.
I don't know. That's just for me more
and,
than anything.
And I understand, that, but sometimes when I have moms, and I'm not saying this about you, Betty, I'm just saying it about moms who go to doctor after doctor after doctor, and they pretty much kind of shake their heads and say, yeah, he's got a language delay, he needs to be in speech. That if we could bottle up some of that energy that sometimes moms use on getting other second opinions from a person they're going to see once, and could channel that into tons of therapy and working with the kid at home, you know, that time is going to be better in the long run for Sean than, you know, getting lots and spending lots and lots of time and money and resources on diagnostic opinions. Because once you get the diagnosis or whatever, it really doesn't change what you do on a day-to-day basis. And so it's the therapy. It's the you working with him. It's that focus that ultimately will determine how things go for Sean rather than even getting a big diagnosis now. And sometimes doctors are wrong. And so even if you get a bad report, you can still have a great outcome with a kid, or vice versa. You know, sometimes the doctor will tell a mom, you know, see a kid one day for 20 minutes, if you're lucky, and they'll make these grand predictions about, oh, he's going to be fine, and then 2 years later, he's still really, really struggling. So keep your appointments, do that kind of thing, but just know that it's what happens on a day-in, day-out basis that's going to make more of a difference for him probably than somebody else's opinion. Kate, do you want to chime in on that? Do you agree with that?
Yes, I do. I think a lot of times it's Jennifer, right?
No, Betty.
Betty. That was
Betty.
Our last writer. Betty. A lot of times parents who, and I definitely understand why you'd like a little foundation for what's really going on and all of that medically. On the other hand, I see a lot of parents who don't get firm answers, particularly in kids. It doesn't sound like your child has anything. You know, we don't know Sean, but, you know, it doesn't sound like there's too much. Could there be something on an MRI? Could be, probably not. And I think what Laura says is absolutely true. I can't imagine what it would be that there'd be anything that you could do other than what you're already doing. And so it is kind of like, well, you know, I have had a few kids come back with MRIs that show something. Does it change the prognosis? No. Does it change the treatment? No. It just may give a name to something, but they were much more significantly delayed than it sounds like your child is. So, you know, it could be that there's something that might show up on some kind of a scan, but probably not likely.
Okay.
You know, I think so.
Right, and I was going to say, but I do think the doctor is going to make you feel good about the decisions you've made to go ahead and pursue therapy. You know, he's in your state's early intervention program. You're going to add PT now. He's still getting speech. And I think the rehab doctor in particular will say to you, good job, Mom. You're on the right track. And he may say, I'd like for him to have more speech, or I'd like for him to have more PT or, you know, OT, and make kind of those additional treatment recommendations. But my point about the whole thing is you may not ever get a firm answer like Kate said, and so you just know that that big question mark may be there for a long time. And the things that you do with him every day and the ways that you guys work with him are going to be ultimately what matters and ends up making this better for him.
We have your DVDs, and he stays home with my husband while I'm at work all day.
Uh-huh.
How often, so I can, like, write it down and tell him that you said how often should he be working with, like, on a daily basis? I know you've said, like, you know, it can't just be sporadic. It should be every day.
Right.
How often do you recommend parents to be on the ground with the play, therapy, trying to get the expressive speech going?
You know, and this is what I tell the parents I work with. And we don't have tons of great, you know, you work this many hours with a kid and he's going to be just fine. We don't have any research that tells us that. We do know that children that are on the autism spectrum, and Sean is not. But
that I know of.
Yeah. But that Dr. Greenspan says that children need to spend 20 to 25 hours a week engaged in interaction, quality interaction with an adult. And
okay.
So while, Sean, you haven't talked about social problems, that he, you know, he seems connected to you. You said his receptive language is very good.
He
understands. He's following through. Yeah. So while we know that that big 20 to 25 hour a week goal would be out there for any kid who's struggling developmentally, that's kind of hard to do.
Okay.
So what I tell parents of children on my caseload is to try to have three little, well, fit in as much play as they can. But if you have a parent who's really looking for a specific time and number, I would say, like a 30-minute little play session in the morning, another 30-minute play session in the afternoon, and then another one that evening, so that he's getting an hour to an hour and a half a day where you're playing with the focus on communication. And that's usually doable.
The struggle we have is I have a 4-and-a-half-year-old who's very verbal, who at two with, like, full conversation. So our best time is when he's away somewhere, but that's hard to do.
It is hard to do, and I certainly get that, and I understand just the real-life demands that, you know, we all have with parenting our other children, but that would be with the 4-and-a-half-year-old. Whatever the 4-and-a-half-year-old likes to do, whether it be amuse, is it a girl or a boy?
A boy.
Amuse himself over, you know, with some kind of cool toy that he only gets to play with when Dad is playing with Sean. That might be something.
Idea.
Yeah, you know, something that whatever he loves to do, you know, that he can go do that all by himself and make it up, you know, so that he thinks that time really is all about him getting to do that special thing all by himself.
Okay.
While Dad plays with Sean. You could do that. I'm not a big proponent of television for children, but in this, if that would be a thing for the 4-and-a-half-year-old to get to do, you know, you can watch the show while Daddy goes and plays with Sean. But this is your time. You know, this is your TV time right now. So, you know, think about ways that you can make it where the 4-and-a-half-year-old would feel like he got to do a big boy thing all by himself while Dad is occupied with Sean playing with those things. And then, you know, usually we say moms do the morning and the afternoon playtime, and then when Dad comes home, that evening spot is for Dad. Well, that can be for you.
Okay.
And then you'll know that every night that you can, you know, you have that time set aside, and it's, you know, just what he needs and what it's going to take. So
okay,
I think that's pretty doable, and you may not get to do it every single day, but it certainly would be a goal, and I do think most families can try to fit that in most days. So hopefully that'll work for you.
Thank you so much, and I'm
sure
I'll be calling in again.
Oh, I'd love it. All right. Thanks, Betty.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Yay, maybe on Sundays we really will get more calls. So
yeah, that's great. Laura, I've never told anybody 3 30-minute sessions a day.
I tell lots of parents that.
Well, I think it's ideal. I just don't know. I mean,
if you look at the 20 to 25 hour a week, and
right.
I'm not saying that I could accomplish that every single day of my life, but if you don't have a pretty high goal,
right.
Then you may not even get one of them done. If it doesn't become part of the day, you're going to look up, it's 4 days later, and you haven't done a darn thing
about what that therapist recommended. Totally agree. I would say at the very least, absolutely guarantee one a day. That is etched in stone. And pretty much, you know, with very few exceptions, if Dad's home with them during the day, there's some time in the morning when they have to eat and they hang out a little while, and they, you know,
yeah,
that could be the set time every morning. And then if Mom could commit to hers every evening, that's at least two a day.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
And, but if you say, I think if you say this to a parent, you try to do this once a day, they do look up 4 days later and haven't done a thing. But if you say, no, he needs to be getting this 2 or 3 times a day, you can at least make it happen once.
Right.
And so if you don't set that bar higher, I think it's too hard to let it go.
Mm-hmm.
And I know parents freak out about the 20 to 25 hours a week, and again, that is a recommendation for specifically for children with autism. But at the same time, you know, these kids with severe developmental delays, if parents think, what's it going to take for me to do? That's what it's going to take. You're going to have to do it.
Yeah.
You're going to have to do it because there wouldn't be a problem.
The activity of a normal day, and before you know it, there really hasn't been any one-on-one time, and it's been about going to the grocery and putting the groceries away and cleaning up the house and doing laundry and, you know, maybe going for a walk, which would be nice, but nothing that's really directly targeted towards what are we going to do today to help our child, you know, make the progress we want to see him make. And it is very focused.
I think if you tell people, if you say, okay, every morning you do it, well, then what happens when you realize that it's 3:30 and you haven't done it, and you
mm-hmm.
say, okay, I'll just do better tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
They don't think, oh, I better get this afternoon time in and this evening time in. I think it helps direct the focus a little bit better, and it may not be completely attainable every day or even 5 days a week, but boy, look at how much it would help if they even hit it twice. And if you're aiming for 3 and only get 2, that's better than aiming for 1 and not doing it for 3 days.
Right.
So that's my point about that. And it does sound like they wanted a little bit more structure, or a little, you know, X number of minutes, X times a day.
Mm-hmm.
And I hope that by hearing that, some parents wouldn't just say, well, forget it, I can't do any of that. But it's unlikely that they would have tuned in this long on the show or listened to us week after week after week if they were that kind of, you know, if that were
right. They
not
weren't
their
really
focus
interested
anyway.
In committing
right.
and doing what the
right.
child needs. But yeah, and it really, I mean, 20 to 30 minutes flies by pretty darn quickly. They do have the older child, but using the, you know, some kids by 4, they're interested in the computer or the TV or a cool toy. And I would have
right.
the cool toys put up just like I would have Sean's
uh-huh.
cool toys put up that I
yeah.
would use during the therapy playtime.
Right.
We always advocate, you know, don't use what they have in their toy box all day, every day, because they're probably not terribly interested in that anymore.
Right.
So, you know, just as she or he might have Sean's favorite trains and a puzzle that he really likes and, you know, whatever other toys he happens to be interested in, then they could have the things put up for the bigger boy to that he only gets when it's Sean's time. So
right. And I wouldn't even really even say Sean's time. I would say this is your time to do X, you know, whatever the thing is that he likes to do, and really kind of make it be about the bigger boy getting to do that fun thing and not even mention that daddy's in the room playing with Sean. You know, let it be kind of the secret special thing for the bigger kid and have the focus that way. But I was glad we got a call. I hope Betty will call and update us. And two, I'm not trying to discourage parents from getting more diagnostic information. I just think, like what you said, is you don't always get answers, and then you're just as baffled. And then sometimes for some moms, and again, I'm not saying this about Betty, but it becomes more about their drive is all about getting a diagnosis rather than their drive being about the intervention. And intervention is what's going to make him better, not a 20-minute meeting with a different specialist every 2 or 3 weeks. So,
right, and it did sound like their exposure to the neurologist was not really particularly helpful. And
right.
I think a lot of times in these kids who, you know, there's something that isn't clicking along typically. Obviously, she has her concerns, and they're warranted. On the other hand, there may not be some definitive diagnosis. Oftentimes, there isn't, and they never really know, you know.
Right. And even
it
if
is
they
what
do,
it is.
Even if they do, what does it really matter if it comes up with the name? I mean, it still sometimes would change your treatment, but you're not going to get a prescription that will fix it. You're probably not going to get to have a medical procedure that will fix it. So what are you left with? You're left with therapy.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's what I try to help moms, you know, shift the focus. And it's not the therapy, the once a week or the how many ever appointments that you're taking your kid to from the professional. It's you learning the techniques as a mom or dad and implementing those at home. I am reading for the first time, James McDonald's book, Dr. James McDonald, the Talk to Play or Play to Talk. Oh, gosh, I'm saying it wrong. I think it's Play to Talk. And I love this analogy that he has in the book. And it says, it's when you take piano lessons, it's not the once-a-week piano lesson that makes you a better pianist. It's the practice that you do between the lessons. And that's what therapy is like, don't you think, Kate? We can help kids get better in our hour a week, but it's when moms and dads really get on board and learn the strategies and learn what we're doing and take the little word list that we've left. Oh, gosh, he said it for Kate today. Now I'm going to try to get him to, you know, use that word this week. That's when kids get better, and that's when kids really start communicating. So it's not the once-a-week shot. It's what you do between every Tuesday at 10 o'clock that's more effective than that one therapy appointment. So that's a great book, and I have read his website and looked at that book before, but I'm really reading it now. So it's a great one. Have you read that before?
I don't think I've really read it. I have some of his stuff, and I do think it's really good. He's very big into the social connection and establishing that and how to build on that. And really, that's our brand of therapy, you know?
Exactly. And so it's that. But I loved that analogy because I took piano lessons as a child. I have a piano right now in my home. Do I sound as good as I did when I played more than twice a year? Yes. You know, when I practiced every week or every day, it was a lot better, but it really isn't that lesson that makes you so much better. It's the everyday practice in between. So I thought that was a super analogy that parents will really understand. Okay, I'm going to move on and do, oh, goodness, I think we have another caller.
Oh, yay. This was a good idea I had.
I know. Hi there. Are you there? Caller? Hello? Yes. Hi.
Oh, it's Patty again. I was just calling back to listen. I didn't press 1 to speak.
Okay.
I wanted to hear the end
of
the show.
You just sit there and listen. That'll be fine.
Okay. I'm sorry.
That's okay. No big deal. Okay. There we go. All right, let's move on with this one. And this is a short one, Kate. We have 6 more minutes, and this is one that
we'll
answer.
Oh, well, we got our caller, so that took up.
That's
okay.
Right. Okay.
Can I read the
she
next
said,
one?
Go ahead.
Is this one for Melanie?
Uh-huh.
Okay, it says, hello. First, I need to tell you your site is wonderful. My son Ryan is turning 3 on 9/13 tomorrow. And he is having some speech issues. He really didn't start talking until 2.5 years old, so I was concerned his doctor was not, so I waited to have him evaluated. And we hear that a lot. We like those when parents are like our last caller and they go ahead and do it if they're worried. But anyway, she finally did it, and it says, when I did have him evaluated, he scored in the bottom 4% for expressive language. I am happy to say that after working with a talented therapist, he is talking all the time. The new he's done great. The new issue is when he talks, it is with final consonant deletions. I try to break down the word and have him repeat, but he goes back to calf for cat, leaving off the final T. Or he'll transpose consonants, so instead of cat, he'll say ta or ta. He also has a lot of difficulty with sentence structure. Lay down me, omitting with me. I constantly repeat the correct version to him. I guess I'm looking for some hope. It's so hard to see him struggle and not progress as his peers. As I said, his therapist is wonderful, but I feel like I need to be doing more with him at home. Do you have any suggestions? I'm pretty sure Teach Me to Talk when I had him evaluated, and the techniques really helped. Do you have any other videos that address the issues listed above? Thanks so much for your help, Melanie.
Well, I would say, Melanie, that he has done a darn good job in 6 months catching up and really starting to talk, because it sounds like he's a relatively new talker. Some of the specific things that she's describing as problems, like leaving off ending consonants, those are very typical errors. And so I wouldn't worry too much about that just yet. And he's still going to be a little later to get some of those milestones. I mean, we really like for children to be including consonants at the ends of words by 3. But because he didn't start to talk until he was 2.5, that milestone will be pushed back further beyond 3. So don't worry about that too much. That just sounds to me like it's a developmental issue that will probably get better with you just modeling ending sounds for him, and I wouldn't do a ton of that either so that he doesn't feel like, or a ton of correcting him so that he doesn't feel like, gosh, every time I open my mouth, my mom is on me. That is so defeating for a new talker. So it's when he says, look at a cat, say, yes, look, there's the cat. I see that. And so you're modeling that, and he's getting that final consonant and hearing you say that, but you're not saying, you forgot that sound on the end of that word. Go back and put that on. You've missed the whole purpose of him trying to communicate with you and tell you there's a cat, and then you've reinforced his little error that he left off the ending sounds, maybe sometimes without even giving him a model of how it should sound. So you really want to keep it positive and just model those ending sounds, and in time those will come. She does say sometimes he'll have a T for a C sound. Again, that's a very common error for children to make. Sometimes those sounds like C's or K's and G's don't come in until closer to 3. So, again, those milestones will be pushed back a little bit because he was a later talker. The other thing she mentioned, sentence structure, lay down me and omitting with. With is actually a preposition that lots of children don't get until 3.5 to 4. And so sometimes you will hear 2.5-year-olds use that word, but really that's a later developing preposition or a location word. So that he's not saying with is not a big deal. Again, you just want to model what he should say. And it's great if he says it, but it's also great if he doesn't, because, again, with isn't really an age-appropriate word for him to have. And just try to hang on and keep working with him like you've done. And it sounds like he's made great progress and that she's on the right track. I did want to mention, if she needs some help addressing intelligibility, I do have that DVD, Teach Me to Talk with Apraxia and Phonological Disorders. And so she may want to take a look at that, because that talks about how to cue children when they're making those errors. But if I were you, Melanie, I would hold off with that for Ryan, because some of those things he's just going to get as he matures and has more experience talking.
Yeah, it really does sound like in the 6 months he's been getting therapy and she's been focused on this, he's made great progress. If he's
right,
just talking at 2.5, and here he's just turning 3, and he's using spontaneous 3-word phrases,
I'd say woohoo! Yeah, we did good. Yeah.
Wonderful progress.
Yeah.
And probably will look that much better in the next 6 months. If, you know, she should continue to work on it, she should continue to focus on it and help him get the therapy he needs. Sounds like she has a great therapist. That's perfect. But really, you know, the future is pretty bright for Ryan because things are looking pretty good already.
Mm-hmm.
Those Arctic things tend to resolve themselves. And as you said, he is, you know, he only started talking at 2.5, so he's really only been talking for 6 months. So it's
right.
even less concerning for him than a child who's been talking for 1.5 years at this age.
Exactly, exactly. Mm-hmm. So I would just keep doing what you're doing, Melanie, and just keep helping Ryan learn language. But I wouldn't be overly concerned about that. And I do want you to talk to your speech pathologist about that as well, because I hope that she'll tell you the same thing that Kate and I have said today. All right, we're at the end of our hour. I'm hoping with this new time that we will continue to get calls like we got today from our mom named Betty. So please join us next Sunday at 4 o'clock. And if you have a question you'd like to call in and ask, do that. If you think Kate and I might need a few days to ponder it, please send me an email at laura@teachmetotalk.com or put it there on my website, and we will be more than happy to take a stab at it next week. But we really love it when moms call. So thanks, Betty. We appreciate that. Do you want to say any parting words, Kate?
See any of our listeners who are going to Edinburgh and Edinburgh on Thursday.
Introduce yourself and tell us you listen to the podcast. We'd love it. All right. Talk to you
later.
Except
don't call me out because I only do it. Somebody was saying, one of our moms that we've shared, Laura, well, you do the podcast every week. I said, that's on the phone. That's different.
And I promise you I'm not going to embarrass you there, so there you go.
Good, that's good. I don't want to have to say anything to the group except for maybe hello. I can maybe manage a hi. Other than that, I just want to be somebody listening to a good presentation about speech and language development. So.
Oh, we're going to have a great day. So if you're in that area and you're a speech pathologist or a parent want to join us, I would love to have you that day. And you can get registration information on the website at teachmetotalk.com. All right, talk to you later.
Okay.
Thanks.
Bye.